That is very interesting. And did the nuns go back at a later date to try again?
Yes, as a matter of fact, they did. On the day of the inquest.
The day that the poisoned wedding cake was left in the cottage.
Oh, no, that's a ridiculous idea.
My ideas are never ridiculous. But I have noticed one of my victims over there, by the waterfall. I think that I must have a word with her, but please, Inspector, do not go away. It will not be long now.
I'll wait for you back at the house, Mr. Poirot.
Too much of water hast thou, fair Ophelia. You are perhaps studying the role?
The only Shakespeare I've ever played was Jessica in The Merchant, and that was in rep. It's a lousy part, anyway. I thought you were supposed to be catching the 12 o'clock train.
I missed it. I have been sitting in the little summer house, hoping that you might perhaps pay me a visit.
I had a lot to think about. Important things. I was trying to come to a decision.
About your husband?
In a way.
The police officer leading the inquiry into Mrs. Longanay's murder is here. He will be taking statements from all of you about what you were doing at the time of her death.
That'll put Michael on the spot. He thinks I don't know he was with that woman.
How did you find out?
It's perfectly obvious. His nose always twitches when he tells a lie.
Oh, how devoutly thankful I am that I am not married to you, madame.
And now he's discovered that I wasn't shopping that day and is madly suspicious about Regent's Park.
What is all this about Regent's Park?
I went there, you see. After Harley Street.
Huh?
Just to walk about and think. Naturally, Michael thinks I went there to meet some man.
I think, madame, that you will keep your husband. But the poor Susan, she will lose hers.
You're not trying to tell me that Greg's having an affair with someone.
Infidelity is not the only way of losing a husband.
You mean that Greg poisoned Uncle Richard and hatched Aunt Cora and sloshed Helen on the head? That's preposterous.
Then who did, madame?
George, of course. He's mixed up in some kind of currency racket. I had it from some friends of mine who were in Monte. I expect Uncle Richard got to hear of it and was just going to cut him out of his will. I've always known it was George.
There's a telegram for you, Mr. Poirot. Arrived a few minutes ago.
Thank you. It is exactly as I suspected. See for yourself.
Oh, I don't understand a word of it.
The time has come to tell you all.
You sound like the heroine of a Victorian melodrama.
If you would be so good as to assemble everyone in the library, Inspector.
Going to enjoy your moment of triumph, eh? It can't come a moment too soon, as far as I'm concerned. That Gregory Banks is driving me out of my mind. He's confessed to killing Cora now.
For the second time, I announce my departure. I intend to catch the 9:30 train immediately after dinner. I go because there is nothing more for me to do here.
You could have told him that all along. Never was anything for him to do.
I came here originally to solve a riddle. The riddle is solved. Let me first go over the various points which were brought to my attention by Mr. Entwistle.
Why can't you just tell us here and now who did it? Why do we have to go through all this rigmarole?
Because it is my way, Mr. Shane. First, Mr. Richard Abernethy dies suddenly. Secondly, after his funeral, his sister Cora says he was murdered, wasn't he? Thirdly, Cora herself is killed with a hatchet. And then, Miss Gilchrist, the dead woman's companion, is taken ill after eating a piece of wedding cake that contained arsenic. Let us, for the moment, concentrate on the last happening. I am inclined to accept the statement of the postman that, to the best of his knowledge, he did not deliver the package containing the wedding cake. Therefore, we must take into consideration those who were in a position to put it through the letterbox. There were Miss Gilchrist herself, Susan Banks, who was staying at the house, Mr. Entwistle, who was attending the inquest, and a mysterious nun.
But surely there isn't any doubt about Miss Gilchrist being poisoned. She would hardly have done that to herself.
And there is, of course, the consideration that she did not stand to benefit from Richard Abernethy's death, and only in a very minute degree from Cora's.
Whereas I, on the other hand. Is that what you're going to say, Mr. Poirot?
In your case, your motive would almost certainly have been security. You had very good reason to believe that Miss Gilchrist had overheard a conversation between your uncle and Cora which referred to you, and therefore you had a very good reason for getting rid of her. You also refused to eat any of the wedding cake which Miss Gilchrist offered to you.
But I don't like wedding cake.
Now, let us take a look at the mysterious nun. There was a nun who appeared at the time the wedding cake was delivered, a nun who appeared at the door of Timothy Abernethy's house, and a nun who called here the day before Richard Abernethy's death.
3-1, the nun.
But now I would like to introduce a little factor of the case which has not been mentioned before. A postcard of Paul Flexen Harbour.
Oh, for goodness sake, the man's a mountebank. What's a picture postcard got to do with it?
Everything, Mr. Abernethy, as you will see. It was what led me to the truth. Let us go back to the beginning.
Oh, not again.
There would have been no reason at all to suspect any foul play in the death of Richard Abernethy had it not been for the words uttered by his sister Cora after the funeral. You will believe that murder had taken place not so much because of what she said, but because Cora had always been notorious for speaking the truth at awkward moments. And that brings me to the question that I suddenly ask myself. How well did you all know Cora Lankane?
What do you mean?
The younger generation had never seen her at all, or not since they were children. The only people present that day who knew her at all were Mrs. Timothy Abernethy, who had seen her only very briefly at the time of her own wedding, and Mrs. Leo Abernethy, Aunt Helen, who had not seen her for over 20 years.
Are you saying that Aunt Cora wasn't Aunt Cora? Do you mean that it was somebody else who was murdered?
No. It was Cora Lankane who was murdered. But it was not Cora who came here the day before to her uncle's funeral. The woman who was here that day came for one purpose only, to create in the minds of Richard's family the idea that he had been murdered.
Absolute nonsense. What was the point of that?
To draw attention away from the other murder, the murder of Cora Lankane herself. The two deaths were bound to be considered as cause and effect. But if Cora's death were not related to her brother's, and if the attempt to make it look like a robbery were considered unconvincing by the police, then suspicion must inevitably fall on the woman with whom she shared her home.
Oh, but surely, Mr. Pontalier, you're not suggesting that I would commit murder for an amethyst brooch and a few worthless pictures?
No, Miss Gilchrist. For rather more than that. One of those worthless pictures, as Mrs. Banks discovered, had been copied from a postcard, but Mrs. Lankane always painted from life.
I don't see what you're driving at. What does it matter?
Cora was in the habit of picking up pictures at sales and from junk shops that she believed might turn out to be old masters, supposing that for once in her life she really had chanced upon a masterpiece. And although Cora did not recognize it as such, Miss Gilchrist did. Her father, I have discovered, was an artist. She knew that Cora was in the habit of taking her little finds to a friend of hers who was an art critic of some standing, and she must act before the true value of the picture was discovered. Richard Abernethy dies unexpectedly, and the whole plan leaps into her mind. She had learned enough from her father to conceal the old master with a seascape she painted from an old postcard of Polflexen Harbour.
I knew that had to be important.
It was easy enough to administer a powerful sedative in Cora's early morning tea that would render her unconscious for the day of the funeral, although a nun, yet another nun, would hear her moaning restlessly in her bedroom. Miss Gilchrist then set out for Enderby to play Cora's part at the interment of Richard Abernethy and the reading of the will. Without ever having set foot in it, you knew Enderby Hall very well, Miss Gilchrist. Cora had talked to you endlessly about her childhood here with her brothers and sisters and told you all about their children. None of the people at the funeral suspected for a moment that you were not Cora. You were dressed in her clothes, padded out a little, and since she always wore a false fringe of hair, it was easy for you to assume that. Nobody had seen her for 20 years. And in 20 years, people change so much that one often hears the remark, "I would never have known her." But mannerisms are remembered. And Cora had very definite mannerisms, all of which you practiced carefully before the mirror.
I haven't the faintest idea what you're talking
about. And it was there that you made your first mistake. You forgot that a mirror image is reversed. When you saw in the glass the perfect imitation of Cora's bird-like sideways tilt of the head, you did not realize that it was actually the wrong way round.
So that was what Helen noticed when she said that the idea came to her as she was looking in her mirror.
Exactly. That was why she said something was wrong.
And that was why she was coshed on the head.
I never did anything of the sort. The whole thing is a wicked lie.
I may as well tell you that Helen Abernethy's condition is not serious. She will soon be able to tell her own story. However, that was not your only mistake. When Rosamond and Susan began to quarrel about the malachite table, you said that it was particularly lovely. But you could not have seen that table as Miss Gilchrist, because it had been put into a storeroom before the family assembled here this weekend. You could only have seen it as Cora Loncanay when you came here after the funeral.
You know, Miss Gilchrist, the moment you arrived here, I knew that I'd seen you somewhere before. I ought to have realised that it was you who played Cora, but one never looks much.
No, one doesn't bother to look at a mere companion help. A domestic drudge? Almost a servant?
Of course, the suggestion of Richard Abernethy's murder was only the first step. You pretended to have overheard a conversation between him and Cora so as to throw suspicion onto Susan Banks. A nun, who actually did call at the cottage, gave you the idea for a wild red herring of a nun who followed you everywhere. And as for the poisoned wedding cake, so long as prompt action was taken, you knew you were not in any real danger.
No wonder she was so insistent that I should call the doctor.
But what about the picture? What was it?
I arranged for Mr. Entwistle to collect the painting of Polflexen Harbour from Miss Gilchrist's room at Stansfield Grange.
That was a damned liberty.
Oh, poor. The overpainting was removed by a leading firm of art restorers. This evening, I received a telegram. Definitely a Vermeer.
I knew it was a Vermeer. I knew it. Oh, she didn't have the faintest idea. Always prattling on about art and not recognising a Vermeer when it was under her nose. She was a thoroughly stupid woman.
And you killed her in that atrociously brutal way for what you'd have got for that painting.
It would have enabled you to buy a tea shop, would it not, Miss Gilchrist?
I was going to call it the Palm Tree. I meant to start it in a nice neighbourhood where nice people would come in. I had thought of Rye, or perhaps Chichester. Oak tables and little basket chairs with striped red and white cushions.
If you would come with me, Miss Gilchrist.
Oh, Certainly, Inspector. I don't want to give you any trouble, I'm sure. After all, if I can't have the palm tree, nothing really matters very much. I've never imagined a ladylike murderer. It's horrible.
Oh, I've just come back from the assizes. They brought in a verdict of guilty, of course.
After my investigation, they could hardly have done otherwise.
I wouldn't be surprised if she ends up in Broadmoor. She's gone right over the edge since she's been in prison. Perfectly happy, though, and quite gracious. Spends most of her time making plans for a chain of tea shops.
And how are the members of the Abernethy family disposing of their newfound fortune?
Susan is opening a cosmetics business, but it may be some time before the wretched Gregory joins her, if he ever does. He's having a rest cure, as she puts it.
And Rosamund Shane?
Giving up the theatre for good, or so she says.
Aha. That accounts for the visit to Harley Street. She will play the role to perfection. Already I see the most delightful pictures of mother and child in the sketch and the tatler. But I fear she was deeply disappointed when the murderer turned out to be Miss Gilchrist. She had fervently hoped that it would be George. Perhaps he will do it one day, she said. What fun if he did. Ah, mon vieux. I have heard murder called many things, but this is the first time I have ever known it to be described as fun. Perhaps my little grey cells have been missing something all these years.
In Agatha Christie's After the Funeral, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat. Mr. Entwistle, Frank Thornton. Inspector Morton, John Baddeley. Miss Gilchrist, Jennifer Piercy. Helen Abernethy, Tessa Worsley. Maud Abernethy, Jill Balkan. Timothy Abernethy, John Hartley. Susan Banks, Fritha Goody. Gregory Banks, Trevor Rawlins. Rosamund Shane, Tilly Gaunt. Michael Shane, Tam Williams. George Crossfield, Ian Masters. After the Funeral was dramatized by Michael Bakewell.
Egypt! A capital idea, Monsieur Poirot. Just the place to escape from an English winter. And when would you be thinking of going?
Oh, there is no hurry. In about 8 weeks' time, perhaps?
There is a sailing from Marseille.
No. Huh? No, the sea does not agree with me. Ah. The channel, I admit, I cannot avoid, but after that I wish to make my way by train. That is possible, I believe.
Perfectly possible, Monsieur Poirot. You will wish to stay in Cairo, perhaps, at Shepherd's Hotel. And we can arrange excursions to Memphis, Saqqara, and Giza.
Perhaps. But what I really wish is to make a journey up the Nile.
Ah, there is an admirable steamer service.
And beyond Aswan, the second cataract?
For that, you must take a smaller ship, the Karnak. It is provided with every luxury. Ah, Monsieur Poirot, a boat trip up the Nile is the most romantic journey on earth. An opportunity to put the world of crime far beyond you.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and Donald Sinden as Colonel Race in Agatha Christie's Death on the Nile.
Darling, I think it's the most wonderful house in the world, and you've done so much in such a short time. Did you have lots of architects and things?
Three.
And how much did you pay for the place, if you don't mind me asking?
I don't mind in the least, Joanna. 60,000.
Oh, it must be marvellous, just to be able to buy anything you want. These pearls, for instance. I suppose they are real, Lynette.
Of course they're real.
And it's of course to you, my sweet, but it wouldn't be to most people. Oh, they are incredible. So exquisitely matched. How much are they worth?
Around 50,000.
Aren't you afraid of having them stolen?
No. I wear them all the time, and anyway, they're insured.
Oh, let me wear them for an hour or two, will you? It would give me such a thrill.
Of course, Joanna.
You know, Lynette, I really do envy you. You've simply got everything. Looks, personality, endless wealth. And you're still only... Are you 21 yet?
Not till due next year.
The gossip writers say there's a marriage in the offing. Are they right?
I've had quite a few offers, if that's what you mean. But I don't really intend to marry anyone yet. There's so much I want to do with my life.
Mais naturellement, there is always a table for you, Monsieur Poirot. How I wish that you would honor us more often.
You are too amiable, Monsieur Blondin.
You are alone?
Alas, yes, I am alone.
This table here, Monsieur Poirot. Ah. Jules will compose for you a meal that will be a petit poème. You have grave affairs on hand?
Au contraire, you see before you a man of leisure.
I envy
you. Oh, no. It would be unwise to do so. I can assure you it is not so gay as it sounds. How true is the saying that man was forced to invent work in order to escape the strain of having to think.
But there is so much. There are books. There is travel.
Yes, mon ami, there is travel. This year, I intend to visit Egypt. I shall escape the fogs, the greyness, the monotony of the constantly falling rain.
Ah, Monsieur Poirot, how I envy you.
Tell me, who are the charming young couple at that table there?
Oh, no one in particular. I have no idea who the young man is. Mademoiselle is the daughter of the Comte de Belfort, a family which has sadly fallen upon hard times. We are, as always, so fully booked, but I found a table for them because they are so obviously in love. But I must see to your meal, Monsieur Poirot.
In love? Well, she is in love, certainly.
Egypt. All my life I've wanted to see Egypt. We'll spend our honeymoon there and see the pyramids and the Sphinx and go up the Nile together.
It seems that I am not alone in my dreams.
Hang on a minute, Jackie. Aren't you rather counting your chickens before they're hatched?
Of course I'm not. Lynette is my oldest friend. We were at convent school in Paris. She's bought this enormous estate down at Moulton-under-Woad and she's going to need an estate manager. I'm sure I can talk her into taking you on. She won't let us down.
Well, I might let her down.
Nonsense. The job is made for you.
Well, as a matter of fact, I think it is. Well, I haven't really any doubts as to my capability, but how am I going to convince her?
When she sees you, she'll know you're the right man. Just as I did. We'll wait 3 months to make sure you don't get the sack, and then...
And then I'll endow thee with my worldly goods. Is that it?
You seem so indifferent. Aren't you as excited about it all as I am? Do you really care as much as I do?
Oh, don't be absurd, Jackie. Of course I do.
One who loves and one who lets himself be loved. She cares too much, that little one.
Lynette's the most wonderful person in the world. I know I'll be able to persuade her.
Oh, Jackie, where have you been all this time? You just disappear for months on end and you never write.
I hate writing letters. And there's really nothing to write about. I've been 3 parts submerged in jobs. Grim jobs for grim women.
Well, why don't you simply come and live here for a while? You don't have to be short of money, Jackie. I could always...
No, I've not come here to borrow money. But I have come to ask a very big and very special favour of you.
Well, go on.
Is it true you're going to marry Lord Windlesham? All papers say so.
I'm not sure. Perhaps. I haven't made up my mind yet. But what's that got to do with your important favour?
It's just that I thought that if you were, you'd understand.
Jackie, are you trying to tell me that you're engaged?
Yes, I'm engaged.
Well. I thought you were looking particularly alive today. You always do, of course, but even more than usual. Tell me all about him.
His name's Simon Doyle. He's big and square and incredibly simple and boyish and, oh, utterly adorable.
And he's got no money.
Not a bean. He's what you call county and all that, but a very impoverished county, and he's a younger son. He loves the country and country things, but for the last 5 years he's been in the city working in a stuffy office. And now they're cutting down and he's out of a job. Lynette, I shall die if I can't marry him. I'm crazy about him, and he's crazy about me. We can't live without one another.
Darling, you've got it badly.
I know. It's awful, isn't it? It's frightening sometimes. Simon and I were made for one another, and you've got to help us, Lynette.
But how can I help you?
Well, the moment I heard you bought this place, I knew it was the solution. You'll have to have a land agent to run it. And I want you to give the job to Simon.
Oh, but I thought you said...
Oh, he's got all that sort of thing at his fingertips. He knows all about estates. He was brought up on one. And he's got his business training, too. Well, you will give him the job, won't you, Lynette? Oh, say you will, Lynette. Say you
Jackie,
will.
Jackie, stop it. Bring your man down here and let me have a look at him.
Oh, I knew you wouldn't let me down. And you will simply adore Simon. You won't be able to resist him. I couldn't.
You don't really want to go to Mallorca again, surely, Mother?
Well, it's cheap, Tim.
And cold.
So, where were you thinking of?
Egypt.
Egypt?
Real warmth, lazy golden sands. And the Nile. Wouldn't you like to go up the Nile?
Oh, I'd like to. But Egypt's expensive, my dear.
Just for once, we don't have to worry about the money, Mother. I've had a modest little flutter on the stock exchange with thoroughly satisfactory results. I heard this morning.
This morning? But you only had one letter this morning, and that was from...
And that was from Joanna Southwood. Quite right, Mother. You really do have the detective instinct.
I just happened to see the handwriting.
And knew that it wasn't that of a stockbroker. Quite right. As a matter of fact, it was yesterday that I heard from them.
And, what does Joanna have to say? Any news?
Nothing much. The Devonshires are getting a divorce. Windlesham's gone off to Canada. Seems he was pretty badly hit when Lynette Ridgway finally turned him down, particularly when he found out that she was going to marry her land agent.
Well, how extraordinary. Is this land agent person dreadful?
No, not at all. In fact, he's one of the Devonshire Doyles. No money, of course. And he was actually engaged to one of Lynette's best friends. Yeah, pretty thick, that.
No, I don't think that's at all nice.
I know, darling. You don't approve of snaffling other people's husbands and all that sort of thing.
In my day, we had our standards. I think it's horrid.
Anyway, that's quite enough about Lynette Ridgway. What about this Egypt idea?
Well...
That's settled, then. We both always wanted to go to Egypt.
When do you suggest?
Oh, next month, I should think. It'll be a welcome change from living in run-down hotels at second-rate seaside resorts.
They said you wanted to see me. I came as fast as I could. What's up?
Lynette Ridgway's married.
What? Why didn't we hear about it?
She wasn't married when she wrote this letter, but she is now. Morning of the 4th, that's today.
No warning and nothing? Who's the man?
Oh, a fella called Simon Doyle. She doesn't say much. Not that it matters. The whole point is she's married.
What are we going to do about it?
The Normandy sails today. One of us could just make it.
I don't like the idea of tangling with those British lawyers.
I am not suggesting that either of us go to England. She says in her letter she's going to Egypt for her honeymoon. Expects to be there for a month or more.
You mean one of us should go out to Egypt?
Yeah, just happen to run into her somewhere by chance. Since she'll be on her honeymoon, she won't have her mind on the business side of things.
It might be done. You'd manage it better than I would, I guess.
Well, I hope I can pull it off.
You've got to pull it off. Think of what's going to happen if you don't.
She's staying at Shepherd's Hotel in Cairo and then going on to the Cataract Hotel in Aswan.
You know, I think that must be Hercule Poirot.
The detective? That funny little man.
Yes, that funny little man.
What on earth is he doing out here?
Darling, you sound almost excited for once. But I doubt very much whether Monsieur Poirot's here on business.
He seems to have teamed up with the only good-looking girl in the place.
Yes, I suppose she is quite.
Oh, she's more than quite. But she seems so bad-tempered and sulky.
My mother wants me to take some film to be developed. God knows what she finds to photograph in this dump.
You permit that I accompany you, mademoiselle?
Of course, Monsieur Poirot.
They say that Elephantine is so called because the little islands look like a herd of elephants bathing. It enchants me. The sun and the colourful boats on the river. Yes, it is good to be alive. You do not find it so, mademoiselle?
It's all right, I suppose. I think Aswan's a gloomy sort of place. The hotel's half empty and everyone's about 100.
It is true, yes. I have one foot in the grave.
Oh, I wasn't thinking of you. I'm sorry. It sounded rude.
No, 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 not at all. It is natural you should wish for companions of your own age. Ah, well, there is one young man, at least.
The one who sits with his mother all the time. That's Mr. Allerton. I like her, but I think he looks dreadfully conceited.
Oh, and I? Am I conceited?
Oh, I don't think so.
My friends say that I am very conceited.
Oh, well, I suppose you have something to be conceited about.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, crime doesn't interest me in the least.
Oh, I'm delighted to hear that you have no guilty secrets to hide. But the boat from Luxor must have come in. Shall we go and inspect the new arrivals? Madame, your mother was not at lunch today. She is not indisposed, I trust?
The place doesn't suit her. I think she feels it's rather let her down. She was hoping to find inspiration for her next novel.
Hmm.
I shall be glad when we leave.
We are to be fellow passengers, are we not? We both make the excursion up to Wadi Haifa and the Second Cataract?
Yes, we do.
Ah, the man you find so dreadfully conceited is coming after us.
Perhaps he's come to meet somebody off the boat.
Awful crowd, as usual. Makes you wonder why they bother to come up the Nile at all.
Well, because if they've been more at home in Petticoat Lane.
Hello, I'm damned if that isn't Lynette Ridgway.
Where? Which is she?
The girl over there in white, with the tall man. They're coming ashore now. Ah, he's the new husband, I suppose.
Simon Doyle. It was in all the newspapers. They say she's simply rolling. How did she come by all that money?
Her father, Mellowish Ridgway, would you believe? married an American heiress, and Lynette inherited a vast fortune. She must be about the richest woman in England.
She's quite beautiful, too.
We'll try to make time for it, darling. We can easily stay a week or two if you like the place.
Lucky devil. Fancy finding an heiress who hasn't got adenoids or flat feet.
They look frightfully happy. It isn't fair.
Well, I'd better be off. I promised Mother I'd try and get her a parasol. Goodbye, Miss Otterbourne.
So, what is not fair, mademoiselle?
It really seems a little too much for one person. Money, good looks, a marvellous figure, and...
And love? Is that what you would say? But you do not know. He may have married her for her money.
Didn't you see the way he looked at her?
Oh, yes, mademoiselle, I saw all there was to see. Indeed, I saw something that you did not.
What was that?
I saw dark lines below a woman's eyes. I saw a hand that clutched a sunshade so tightly that the knuckles were white.
What do you mean?
I mean that ore is not gold that glisters. I mean that though this lady is rich and beautiful and beloved, there is all the same something that is not right.
Well, I suppose I'd better do something about Mother's wretched photographs. Goodbye, Monsieur Poirot.
Goodbye, Mademoiselle Rosalie. I know that somewhere at some time I have heard the voice of Simon Doyle, though I cannot remember where.
The porters will take the luggage to the hotel. It'll be quite safe with them.
Ah, but of course. It was in Monsieur Blondin's restaurant. And over there, if I am not mistaken, is the girl who was with him.
Why don't we get a boat out to the islands? There's plenty of time.
Oh, yes, I've always wanted...
Hello, Lynette. What a coincidence. We never seem to stop running into one another. Hello, Simon. How are you?
Hello, Jacqueline. We, didn't expect to see you here.
Life is full of surprises, isn't it?
Simon, for God's sake, what are we going to do? What a gathering of notabilities, Monsieur Poirot. I expect we shall see a paragraph about it in the papers soon. Society beauties, celebrated detectives, famous novelists.
You have a novel on hand at the moment, Mrs. Otterbourne?
Mother is waiting for the muse to put in an appearance.
My daughter is quite right for once. I'm being dreadfully lazy, but my public is getting terribly impatient, not to mention my publisher, poor man. Frantic appeals by every post, even cables. I don't mind telling you, Monsieur Poirot, I'm here for the local colour, Snow on the Desert's Face. That is the title of my new book. Snow on the Desert, melted in the first flaming breath of passion. The libraries will ban it, of course, but what does that matter? Sex. Monsieur Poirot, why is everyone so afraid of sex? You have read my book?
Alas, madame. You comprehend, I do not read many novels. My work...
I must give you a copy of Under the Fig Tree. I think you will find it significant.
That is most kind of you, madame.
Oh, Rosalie, I left a copy on my chair in the smoking room. Be a darling and get it for me, will you?
Yes, mother.
Let me congratulate you, madame, on a very lovely daughter.
Rosalie? Oh, yes, yes, she is good-looking. But she's very hard, Monsieur Poirot. And no sympathy with illness. She imagines that she knows more about my health than I do myself.
Would you care for a liqueur, madame? Waiter!
No! No. I'm practically a teetotaler. You must have noticed I never drink anything but water or perhaps lemonade. Uh-huh. I can't bear the taste of spirits.
Yes, monsieur.
A lemonade for madame and for me a glass of Benedictine.
At once, monsieur.
Oh, it's not like that at all.
That Ridgeway girl is remarkably good-looking. A deeply passionate soul, I am certain.
Tell me, madame, who is the man who's with her and her husband?
Oh, that's Mr. Pennington. I believe he's some sort of financial advisor. Oh, what an entrance.
What did you say, madame?
Oh, that girl in the burgundy dress who just sat herself down opposite Lynette Ridgeway. She seems to think she's really somebody.
Here's your book, Mother.
I'll inscribe it for you, Monsieur Poirot.
Will you take a drink, Mademoiselle?
No, nothing. Thank you.
Fearless, unconventional, passionate. That's the way the publishers summed it up. Here you are, Monsieur Poirot.
Honored, madame.
One lemonade, one Benedict.
Thank you.
And, there is a note for you from the American lady. She said it was most urgent. Oh,
thank you.
Oh, thank you, monsieur.
À votre santé, madame.
You know who I am, Monsieur Poirot?
Yes, madame, I know exactly who you are.
And I've heard a great deal about you, and I know you are a very clever man. It happens that I'm urgently in need of someone to help me, and I think very possibly that you are the man who would do it.
You are very amiable, madame, but you see, I am on holiday, and when I am on holiday, I do not take cases.
That could be arranged. Monsieur Poirot, I am being subjected to an intolerable persecution. My own idea was to go to the police about it, but my husband seems to think that they would be powerless to do anything.
Perhaps if you could explain a little further?
The matter is perfectly simple. Before I met my husband, he was engaged to a Miss de Belfort. She was also a friend of mine. My husband broke off his engagement to her. They were not suited in any way. She, I am sorry to say, took it rather hard. She made certain, well, threats, to which I paid very little attention. But instead she has adopted the extraordinary course of following us about wherever we go.
A rather unusual form of revenge. You are, I understand, on your honeymoon.
Yes. The first time she appeared was in Venice. Then we understood she was going to Palestine, but when we got to Mena House, she was there, waiting for us.
And now?
We came up the Nile by boat. When she wasn't aboard, I thought she had stopped being so childish. But when we got here, she was here, waiting for us.
And you are afraid that this state of things may continue?
There must be some way of stopping it.
Oh, you can always leave, move somewhere else.
Then she will follow.
Very probably, yes.
Anyway, why should I run away, as though...
Exactly, madame. As though. It is all there, is it not?
What do you mean?
Why do you mind so much, madame?
I don't deny that Jackie was passionately in love with Simon. But even before he met me, he was beginning to feel that he had made a mistake. Look at it clearly, Monsieur Poirot. Simon discovers that it is I whom he loves, not Jackie. What is he to do? Be heroically noble and marry a woman he doesn't care for, and ruin three lives in the process? I admit that it was terribly hard on Jackie, and I'm terribly sorry about it, but there it is. It was inevitable.
I wonder.
What do you mean?
It is very sensible, very logical, all that you say, but it does not account for one thing.
What is that?
Your profound sense of guilt.
How dare you?
Ah, but I do dare, madame. I suggest that although you may have endeavored to gloss over the fact to yourself, you did deliberately set about taking Mr. Doyle away from your friend. I suggest that the initiative came from you, not from him. You had everything, madame, that life can offer. Your friend's life was bound up in one person. You knew that, but you did not hold your hand.
Couldn't you talk with her? reason with her?
Yes, I could do that. I will do that if you would like me to do so, but do not expect too much. I fancy that Mademoiselle de Belfort is so much in the grip of the fixed idea that nothing will turn her from it.
Jackie is extraordinary. One can't tell what she will do.
You spoke just now of certain threats she had made. Would you tell me what those threats were?
She threatened kill us both. Jackie can be rather Latin sometimes.
I see.
You will act for me.
No, madame. I will not accept a commission from you. I will do what I can in the interest of humanity. There is here a situation that is full of difficulty and danger. I will do what I can to clear it up, but I am not at all sanguine as to my chance of success. Mademoiselle de Belfort, you permit that I speak with you for a little moment?
Certainly. You are Monsieur Hercule Poirot, and you're going to act for Mrs. Doyle, who has promised you a huge fee if you succeed in your mission.
Your assumption is partially correct. I have just come from Madame Doyle, but I am not accepting any fee from her, and strictly speaking, I'm not acting for her.
Then why are you here?
Have you ever seen me before, mademoiselle?
No, I do not think so.
Yet I have seen you. I sat at a nearby table once at Chez Ma Tante. You were there with Monsieur Simon Doyle.
Oh, yes. I remember that evening.
Since then, many things have occurred.
As you say, many things have occurred.
Mademoiselle, I speak as a friend. Bury your dead.
What do you mean?
Give up the past. Turn to the future. What is done is done. Bitterness will not undo it. You have suffered, yes. But what you are doing will only prolong your suffering. Go home. You are young. You have brains. The world is before you.
You don't understand. Simon is my world. You were in the restaurant that night. Simon and I loved each other.
I know that you loved him.
We loved each other. And I loved Lynette. I trusted her. She was my best friend. All her life, Lynette had been able to buy what she wanted. When she saw Simon, she wanted him, and she just took him.
And he allowed himself to be bought.
No, it wasn't like that. Look at the moon up there. You see her very plainly, don't you? But if the sun were to shine, you wouldn't be able to see her at all. I was rather like the moon. When the sun came out, Simon couldn't see me anymore. I know perfectly well that he wouldn't have fallen in love with her if she hadn't made him.
That is what you think.
That is what I know. He loved me. He will always love me.
Even now?
Oh, you don't have to tell me. He hates me. See this? Looks too little to be real, doesn't it?
A very dainty little pistol. Would you really use it?
My grandfather taught me to shoot in South Carolina. And my father fought several duels. He killed a man once over a woman. So you see, I have hot blood in my veins. At first, I thought I would kill one of them. But then I decided to wait. To follow them. Whenever they arrived at some romantic, faraway place, I would be there. And it worked. It got Lynette badly. In a way nothing else would have done. It got right under her skin. That was when I began to enjoy myself. I am poisoning everything for them.
Oh, mademoiselle, I beseech you, do not open your heart to evil, because if you do, evil will come. It will enter in and make its home within you, and after a little while it will no longer be possible to drive it out.
You can't stop me.
No, I cannot stop you.
Even if I were to kill her, you couldn't stop me.
No, not if you were willing to pay the price.
What have I got to live for? Sometimes I want to hurt her. To stab a knife into her, to put my little pistol close against her head and then press with my finger and...
What is it, mademoiselle?
There was someone standing over there.
Huh?
He's gone now.
Well, there seems to be no one here but ourselves, mademoiselle. And I have said all that I came here to say.
You understand that I can't do what you ask?
No, I do not. For you could do it. There is always a moment when you can turn back. There must have been a moment when your friend Lynette could have turned back. She let it pass by, and if one does that, there is no second chance.
No second chance.
Do not let evil enter into you, mademoiselle. Take your chance.
I can't do that, Monsieur Poirot. It's too late.
To fulfill the dream of a lifetime, I had decided to give myself a little holiday on the River Nile. At first, everything was calm and serene, but then I found myself being drawn into a very curious affair, that of the newlywed Lynette and Simon Doyle, and of his former fiancée, Jacqueline de Belfort, who had followed them out to Egypt and deliberately haunted them with her presence.
I'm glad of one thing, Monsieur Poirot. You've made Lynette realise we're more or less powerless in this matter.
Mm-hmm. There is clearly no legal redress.
Did you, have you talked to Jackie, to Mr. Belfort?
Yes, I have spoken with her.
Or did you get her to see any sense?
I'm afraid not.
Well, can't she see what an ass she's making of herself? Hasn't she got any pride or respect?
She has only a sense of injury, shall we say.
I'd understand better if she tried to take a pot shot at me.
You think that might be more like her?
Well, frankly, I do. She's hot-blooded and she's got an ungovernable temper. But this spying on us all the time, it's playing merry hell with Lynette's nerves.
And yours?
Well, I'd like to wring her neck.
There is nothing of the old feeling left?
Well, it sounds a caddish thing to say, but Jackie was too fond of me. A man doesn't want to feel owned body and soul. It's that damn possessive attitude. This man is mine, he belongs to me, and now that I see what Jackie is really like and the length she's likely to go to, I feel as if I've had rather a lucky escape.
Have you any idea, Monsieur Doyle, what these lengths are?
What exactly do you mean?
You know she carries a pistol about with her.
Oh, I don't think she'll use it now. She might have done so earlier, but I believe it's got past that.
It may be so.
I'll tell you the plan I've made, and you can suggest any improvements on it. I've announced, fairly openly, that we're going to stay here for 10 days. But tomorrow, the steamer Karnak starts from Shilal to Wadi Haifa. I propose to book passages on it under an assumed name. Tomorrow, we'll let it be known we're going on an excursion to Philae. Lynette's maid can take our luggage onto the Karnak, and Lynette and I will join the boat at Shilal. When Jackie finds out we haven't come back, it'll be too late. We shall be well on our way.
And suppose she waits here till you return?
We may not return. We may go on to Khartoum, and then perhaps by air to Kenya. Well, she can't follow us all over the globe. Well, what do you think of my plan?
It may work. I, too, shall be on the Karnak. It is part of my itinerary.
Oh, that's not on our account, is it? Oh, I'd hate to think that...
No, not at all. It was all arranged before I left London. I always make my plans well in advance.
That's how the more skillful murderer behaves, I believe. You must tell us something about your more interesting cases on board the Karnak.
No, no. That would be to talk, what do you call it? The shop.
Yes, but your kind of shop is rather interesting. Mrs. Allerton thinks so. She's longing to get a chance to talk to you.
That is the charming lady with the very devoted son.
Yes, she'll be on the Karnak too.
Tell me, who is the third member of your party, the tall, grey-haired gentleman?
Pennington. He's Lynette's American trustee. We ran across him by chance in Cairo.
Ah, very well. You permit a question?
Mm-hmm.
She is of age, madame, your wife?
She isn't actually 21 yet, but she didn't have to ask anyone's permission to marry me. It came as a complete surprise to Pennington. He left America on the Carmelik 2 days before Lynette's letter reached New York, so he knew nothing about it.
The Carmelik?
We ran into him in Shepherd's in Cairo, and when we heard that he was coming up the Nile too, well... It was quite a relief, in a way, being forced to talk about things other than Jackie.
Tell me, was it your idea to come to Egypt for your honeymoon?
No, of course not. As a matter of fact, I'd rather have gone almost anywhere else, but Lynette was absolutely set on it, and so...
Naturally.
But I'd better be getting on. There's a lot to organise before we set off to Philae tomorrow.
Good morning, Monsieur Poirot.
Good morning, Mademoiselle de Belfort. You had to rest for riding. A little excursion into the desert?
Nothing so romantic. I'm hiring a donkey and going off to explore the native villages. Are they of interest?
Oh, they are picturesque, I believe. But do not spend large sums on native curios.
Which are shipped here from Europe. I'm not so easy to deceive as that. Au revoir, Monsieur Poirot.
Au revoir, mademoiselle.
isn't that the girl who used to be engaged to Simon Doyle?
Yes, that is so.
Oh, do excuse me. It's quite unforgivable of me to intrude on you like this. It's just idle curiosity, I'm afraid.
Curiosity is never a vice as far as I am concerned. Rather the reverse. Mrs. Allerton, is it not?
That's right. And you are Hercule Poirot. Uh-huh. It really is quite thrilling to meet you. When my son and I were in Mallorca, there was a Mrs. Leach who was telling the most wonderful stories about you. She'd lost her ruby ring bathing and was lamenting the fact that you weren't there to find it for her.
Parbleu, but I am not the performing seal.
Now, this girl you were talking to, the one who used to be engaged to Simon Doyle, it may sound foolish, but she almost frightened me. She looked so intense.
You are not far wrong, madame. A great force of emotion is always frightening.
Mm. Do people interest you too, Monsieur Poirot? Or do you just reserve your interest for potential criminals?
Oh, madame, that category would not leave many people outside it.
Do you really believe that?
Mm, given the particular incentive...
Even I, perhaps?
Mothers, madame, are singularly ruthless when their children are in danger.
I think that's probably quite true.
Your son is not with you this morning?
No. Tim had some letters to get off before we leave. We're doing the trip to the Second Cataract.
I too, madame.
Oh, it all sounds terribly complicated. A bus from here to the railway station, then a train to Shillong.
Oh, it is only a short journey, I believe. But the steamer is much smaller than the boats on the Lower Nile.
Ah.
I hope that it will not be too crowded.
Your cabin is on the promenade deck, Monsieur Poirot, close to the observation saloon. Let me take your luggage.
See. So, our little journey into Nubia begins, Mademoiselle Rosalie. You are pleased that we are leaving?
Yes. I feel that I'm really getting away from things at last. Away from people.
Not altogether. There are still our fellow passengers. That lady coming aboard now, for instance.
She looks like a very old iguana.
You haven't forgotten my dressing case, Cornelia.
No, Cousin Marie.
You mustn't let any of the porters touch it. Understand?
Yes, Cousin Marie. My God, are those real diamonds? What a frightful old witch.
But you got my paper cutter, haven't you?
But look, there's Mrs. Doyle and her husband. I thought they said they were staying on at Assouan.
We've done it, Lynette. I really think we've thrown her off.
Now we're going into the heart of Egypt, miles away from anywhere, into a fairy tale kingdom.
Looks like we're off.
Why, Lynette! I didn't expect to see you on the boat. Didn't you say you were staying on at Assouan for another 10 days? This is a surprise.
I'm afraid, Monsieur Poirot. Afraid of everything. All these rocks and the gorge on either side of us. It's all so fierce and so grim. What am I going to do? I've never felt like this before. I've always been nice to people, and now I feel surrounded by enemies. It's terrible to feel that there are people who hate you.
No. You must calm yourself.
How did Jackie know we were coming on this boat? How could she have known?
She has brains, you know.
I feel as though I shall never escape from her. Never, as long as I live.
Darling, I do hope you don't mind. I've asked Monsieur Poirot to sit at our table.
Mind? Of course I mind.
Why? What's wrong?
We don't want to be cooped up with an outsider, Mother, particularly on a small boat like this. We'll never get away from the wretched little man.
I'm sorry, Tim. I really thought he would amuse you. After all, he must have some wonderful tales to tell.
I wish you wouldn't have these bright ideas, Mother. We can't get out of it now, I suppose.
You really permit, madame, that I shall avail myself of your kind suggestion?
Of course. Do sit down, Monsieur Poirot.
Thank you. Good evening, Monsieur Allert.
Good evening.
Ah, here's the passenger list. Now, let's try to identify everybody. I always think that's rather fun.
Soup, madame.
Thank you so much. Oh, they put Mademoiselle de Belfort at the same table as the Otterburns. I wonder what they'll make of each other. Now then, Monsieur... Dr. Bessner. Can we identify Dr. Bessner?
No idea. Could be anybody.
The fat man with the shaven head, perhaps.
Oh, he doesn't seem to be enjoying his soup very much. Then, there are the Doyles.
Yeah, with Mr. Pennington, as usual.
Now, who's Mr.
Stanthorpe? At that table there, perhaps?
The quiet young man who never speaks.
Rather nice face.
And intelligent, too.
Mm.
He does not talk, but he listens very attentively, and he watches. I wonder what he's doing here.
Mm. Now then, Mr. Ferguson.
Ah, now, I can tell you all about him. He's at that table over there.
As far as I'm concerned, the pyramids are great blocks of useless masonry stuck there to flatter the ego of some bloated pharaoh.
And he's forever going on about the evils of capitalism and the dignity of labour.
He doesn't look as if he's ever done a day's work in his life.
Hmm.
Then there's Mr. Ricchetti.
Ah, the Italian archaeologist.
Ah, and then there's Miss Van Schuler. Now, that must be the American lady who obviously thinks she's the queen of the boat and who's going to be very, very exclusive.
And the two rather sad-looking women with her must be Miss Bowers and Miss Robson.
Mm.
Miss Bowers is her nurse and Miss Robson's some sort of poor relation. She trots after Miss Van Schuler like an obedient dog.
I shall have to talk to Miss Van Schuler.
She'll give you an old American snub, Mother.
No, no, she won't. I shall just happen to sit down quite near her and talk, in the most casual manner, of course, about any titled friends and relatives I can remember. I think a casual mention of our second cousin once removed, the Duke of Glasgow, might do the trick.
A beautiful night, Mademoiselle de Belfort.
Beautiful, yes. And wonderfully peaceful.
Mm-hmm. For those who are at peace.
Were you surprised to find me on the boat?
Not so much surprised as sorry. Very sorry.
Sorry for me?
That is what I meant. You have embarked on a dangerous journey on a swift-flowing river heading for who knows what currents of disaster.
Why do you say that?
Because it is true. You have cut the lines which moored you to safety. I doubt now if you could turn back, even if you wanted to.
Yes. That is true. One must follow one's star wherever it leads.
Beware, mademoiselle, that it is not a false star.
Even if it is, Monsieur Poirot, I cannot help but follow it.
Mademoiselle Robson, is it not?
That's right. And you are the famous Monsieur
Poirot, mademoiselle. Hercule Poirot. And did you enjoy your excursion to the Temple of Esambua this morning?
Oh, yes, it was marvelous.
But your companion did not accompany you?
No.
No.
Cousin Mabel, that's Miss Van Schuler, never gets up very early. She has to be very careful of her health.
Oh.
That's why her nurse, Miss Bowers, is traveling with us.
I see.
That's Mrs. Doyle over there in the corner, isn't it?
Yes, that is correct.
Oh, I think she's the most elegant woman I've ever seen, and so wealthy, of course.
Lynette, I know it's rather tactless to talk business to a bride on her honeymoon, but there are just one or two things...
Why, of course, Uncle Andrew.
There are a few documents in which I need your signature.
Of course.
No time like the present?
Oh, they're just here.
Her husband just worships the ground she walks on, doesn't he? And he's so English. And I think that grey-haired lady you're with is so distinguished, too.
Mrs. Allerton?
Oh, she's a cousin to a duke, I believe. She was talking about him right near us last night. Is she actually titled herself?
Excuse me, but can you possibly tell me when we arrive at Abu Simbel?
Sometime tomorrow morning, I believe. But all the details are pinned up on the bulletin board.
Thank you. So sorry to have disturbed you.
What a very odd young man. Who is he?
I think his name is Fanthorpe.
Perhaps it's just because he's English.
Ah.
Now he's gone to hang round Mrs. Doyle's table.
Mercy, have I got to sign all these?
Oh, it's tough on you, Lynette. I know, but I need to get your affairs into proper shape. Now, this is the lease on the Fifth Avenue property, and the Western Land Concession. You just signed there and there.
Just a second.
Oh, it's only the transfer. You needn't read it.
I'll just look it through.
Well, you're not going to read the whole lot, are you, darling? We'll be here all day.
My father always taught me to read everything through. He said there might be some clerical error.
You're a good woman of business, Lynette.
Well, she's much more conscientious than I'd be. I sign where they tell me, on the dotted line, and that's that.
Well, that's frightfully slipshod.
I hope I'm not butting in, but you must let me say how much I admire your capacity for business, Mrs. Doyle. I'm a lawyer, and I find ladies sadly un-businesslike. Never to sign a document unless you've read it through is admirable. Altogether admirable.
Well, thank you, Mr... Next, please, Uncle Andrew.
I think perhaps at some other time might be better, as your husband says. If you have to read through all these, we'll be here all day. We should be enjoying the scenery. We can attend to your business affairs later.
Makes you want to puke, doesn't it?
Huh? What is it that makes you want to puke, Monsieur Ferguson?
That girl in there, signing share transfers and throwing her weight about. Hundreds and thousands of wretched workers slaving for a mere pittance to keep her in silk stockings. Never done a hand's turn in her life. Nor have you, by the look of you.
I work with my brain. The little grey cells. And I am not ashamed of it.
So what do you do, then?
I am a detective.
Good God. Do you mean you're one of that woman's lackeys?
No, I have no connection whatever with Madame Doyle. I am en vacances.
Enjoying a little vacation.
And you are not on holiday also?
Holiday? No, I'm here to study social conditions.
Indeed. In that case, I will leave you to your studies, monsieur.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No. Do not derange yourself, Madame Otterborn. Hold on to me. It is quite all right.
Oh, it's the motion of the boat, you know. Mm-hmm. I never did have any sea legs. I was just going to... Oh, if only the boat would keep still. To be left alone, hour after hour.
No. I will send your daughter to you, Madame. Go back into your cabin. It will be safer so. You might be swept overboard.
Ridiculous, Mr. Allerton. I can't believe that.
It's true, I tell you.
Excuse me, Mademoiselle Rosalie, but your mother is asking for you.
Is she? Oh, my God, what a bore.
I really can't make that child out. One minute she's as happy as anything, the next she's downright rude.
Spoilt and bad-tempered, if you ask me.
No, I don't think it's that. I think she's unhappy.
Oh, well, I suppose we all have our private troubles.
You know, Monsieur Perrault, I don't think I've ever seen anything quite so wonderful in all my life.
Ma chère Mademoiselle Robson, Abu Simbel has been called the eighth wonder of the ancient world.
It's the way those statues are hewn out of the cliff, almost as if they'd grown out of it. And they're so big and so peaceful.
Who are they supposed to be?
They're figures of Rameses II.
You know, Monsieur Perrault, I'm truly glad now that we came on this trip. And Lynette seems to have got her nerve back at last. She's actually facing up to this business.
I think that is very probable.
We're both agreed we're not going to hide from Jackie anymore. We'll just meet her on her own ground and show her that this ridiculous stunt of hers doesn't worry us a bit. Well, that ought to show her.
Yes, it should show her.
Come on, darling. The tour for Abu Simbel's just setting off. I don't want to miss it.
Above the doorway between the statues, you will see a figure of Ra, the god of the sun. On either side appear the god Mart and the god Usar. That is the one with the head of the jackal. Above those, high up on the cliff, you can make out a frieze of 22 baboons. The great temple of Rameses II is aligned west to east, so that the sun can penetrate its interior. This happens only twice a year, on the 21st of February and the 21st of October.
This is your first visit to Egypt, Mr. Pennington?
No, as a matter of fact, I came out here in 1923. But this is my first trip up the Nile.
Madame Doyle was telling me that you came over from America on the Carmenic.
Yeah, that is so.
I was wondering if you happened to encounter some friends of mine who were aboard the Washington Smiths.
Well, I can't recall anyone of that name, but the boat was full and we had bad weather. Some passengers never appeared at all.
You have known Madame Doyle for many years, I understand.
Well, Lynette, I've known her since she was so high. Her father and I were lifelong friends.
Now I'm her financial advisor.
And she's come into a very considerable fortune.
Yeah, Lynette is a very wealthy woman.
I suppose that the recent slump is bound to affect any stocks, however sound they may be.
Yeah, that's true to a certain extent. The position is very complicated, but you must excuse me, Mr. Poirot. I want to get a really good look at those statues.
Yes, of course, of course.
It says here that the name of one of these gods or goddesses was Mutt. Can you believe it?
Cornelia, have you got my shawl? Give it to me.
Yes, Cousin Marie.
From 1292 to 1225 B.C. He defeated the Hittites at Kadesh and married a Hittite princess. The great temple was the center of the monument. It was lavishly decorated with mural paintings and statues of the pharaoh and with his gods.
This place gives me the creeps. Who are these people supposed to be anyway?
That one's Amun, I think. And this, I imagine, is Osiris. And the one over there is Ramses again. Don't you think they're impressive?
They're far too impressive for me. I don't care for them. I want to go back into the sunlight.
How lovely it is here. I feel warm and safe and happy. For the first time, I feel really happy.
And that's the way it's going to be from now on.
Look out! Get away! Take me!
Lynette!
Oh, another 2 feet to your right and you would have been crushed to atoms.
Stop! Tell her!
How did it happen? Did some fool shove that boulder over the cliff or did it get detached on its own?
I think someone did it deliberately. Oh,
let us go back to the boat, madame. You must have a restorative.
Thank you, Monsieur Poirot. I feel better now that we're away from those threatening cliffs.
Madame.
I must admit, when I saw that thing hurtling down towards you, Lynette, I thought you were a goner.
It all happened so quickly. I didn't really see what it was.
I'm afraid I'm a little on the late side. Is the guide still there?
Yes, he's over at the temple.
I wouldn't want to miss it for the world.
So she was on the boat all the time?
Yes. It's quite a relief in a way. For a moment I thought...
Yes, I know what you thought. But if it wasn't Jackie... That means there's someone else who wants to kill me. There's a telegram on the notice board for me. I wonder what it can be. What on earth?
What's the matter?
I don't understand. Potatoes, artichokes, beetroots. What does it mean, Simon?
What do you think you are doing? Give that to me. Did no one teach you to read? Is your name Riccati?
Who on earth was that?
Riccati. He's an archaeologist, I think.
Riccati? I thought it said Ridgway.
But you're not Ridgway anymore.
Stupid. Do you think I ought to apologise?
No, I don't. He was bloody rude.
They just don't care, Monsieur Poirot. They don't mind if I'm here or not. I can't hurt them anymore.
And now we are at our furthest point up the Nile. Tomorrow we shall begin our journey back to Shalal.
You were right. I should never have come on this journey in the first place. What did you call it? A journey of the soul? But I can't turn back now. I've got to go on. And I shall go on. They shan't be happy together. They shan't. I'd rather kill them!
Your girlfriend seems a trifle upset, Poirot.
What? Ah, Colonel Race.
Bit of a surprise, eh?
A very different setting from our last meeting.
Mr. Shaitana's little bridge party. Oh. I was always sorry I wasn't able to see that one through to the end.
And now you are here at Wadi Haifa.
Yes. And I shall be your fellow passenger on the trip back to Shalal.
Well, that is very interesting, Colonel. Shall we perhaps go down to the saloon and have a little drink together?
Yeah.
One whiskey and one double orangeade and sugar.
Excellent, thank you.
Thank you, monsieur.
So, you are making your return journey with us, Colonel. You would go faster, would you not, on the government steamer which travels by night as well as by day?
You've hit the nail on the head as usual, Poirot.
So, It is the passengers which interest you.
One of them.
Now,
yes.
Which one, I wonder?
Unfortunately, I don't know myself. There's no need to conceal anything from you. We've had a good deal of trouble out here, one way or another, over the past months. It isn't the people who are ostensibly leading the rioters that we're after. No, we know all about them. It's the men who are putting the match to the gunpowder keg. There were three of them. One's dead, one's in prison. I want the third man. A man with five or six cold-blooded murders to his credit.
And he is on the boat?
Yes.
Do you have a description of him?
No. He's supposed to be of American, Irish, and French descent. That doesn't help much, does it? Got any ideas?
An idea, which is all very well, but there is something happening on this boat, Colonel, which causes me disquietude.
Tell me.
Figure it to yourself. A person A who has grievously wronged a person B. The person B desires revenge and is making threats.
And A and B both being on board this boat?
Precisely.
And B, I gather, being a woman?
Exactly.
Who is A, by the way? A particularly disagreeable person?
Au contraire, a charming and beautiful young lady. I'm not happy, my friend. If I'm right, and after all I am constantly in the habit of being right, then there is a matter for grave inquietude. And now you add yet another complication. You tell me that there is a man on the Karnak who is a ruthless killer.
Yeah, but he doesn't usually go around killing charming young ladies.
Today I advised the lady, Madame Doyle...
Mrs. Doyle is A.
Yes. Earlier today I advised her to go with her husband to Khartoum, not to return on this boat. But they would not listen to me. Oh, I pray to heaven that we arrive at Shalal without catastrophe.
Aren't you taking rather a gloomy view?
I am afraid, Colonel. Yes. I, Hercule Poirot, am afraid. I had achieved the dream of a lifetime. I had travelled up the Nile, and I had seen the temples of Luxor and Abu Simbel. Yet I was not happy, for on our boat there was a murder in the making. Jacqueline de Belfort had threatened to kill her former friend Mrs. Doyle for stealing her fiancé. And yet, when an attempt was made upon Madame Doyle's life, during an expedition to one of the temples, Jacqueline de Belfort was on board the boat, far from the scene of the crime. Was there another passenger on board who had reasons for wanting the death of Lynette Doyle?
You know, you're really rather a nice person, Miss Robson. Why the hell do you let yourself be bullied and put upon by that hideous Van Schuler woman? Oh, don't you know that you're every bit as good as she is?
But I'm not. Cousin Marie's very cultured.
Cultured? The word makes me sick. She wouldn't like to think we were talking together like this, would she?
I don't know, Mr. Ferguson.
You know damn well she wouldn't, because she thinks I'm not her social equal.
I wish you wouldn't get so worked up about things. It's such a lovely night.
Don't you realize that everyone is born free and equal?
Of course people aren't equal. I know I'm kind of homely looking, and I used to feel mortified about it sometimes. And I can't help wishing that I'd been born beautiful and elegant like Mrs. Doyle.
Mrs. Doyle? She's the kind of woman that ought to be shot as an example.
I can't bear that kind of silly talk. I'd better get back to the saloon. Cousin Marie will be wondering where I've got to.
Don't rush me. Cornelia, where have you been? What have you done with my velvet stole?
No idea, Cousin Marie. Shall I see if it's in your cabin?
It isn't in the cabin. I had it just after dinner in here, and I haven't moved out of the saloon.
was on that chair.
I can't see it anywhere, Cousin Marie.
Nonsense. I know it's here. Oh, I'm going to bed. When you've found it, bring it to my cabin.
Waiter.
Yes, mademoiselle.
Bring me a large gin and tonic.
At once, mademoiselle.
You look sleepy, Monsieur Poirot.
Oh, it is true, Mademoiselle de Belfort. I am consumed with sleep. I can hardly keep my eyes open. I think I must go to my cabin.
Is the weather so close, so oppressive?
It must be that, yes.
It's been the sort of day when you feel that something is going to go snap and break, when one can't go on any longer. Oh. Good night, Monsieur Poirot.
Good night, mademoiselle.
What are you looking for, Miss Robson?
Oh, Cousin Marie's stall. It's not here. She must have left it in her cabin. Have you been ashore?
No, only out on the deck. It's beautiful now. Who's the man playing bridge with the Doyles and Mr. Pennington?
He's Colonel Race, I believe.
Simon, we're waiting for you to call.
What? Sorry. Pass.
Your drink, mademoiselle.
Oh, thank you. Can I get you one, Miss Robson?
No, thanks.
Suit yourself. Here's to crime. Waiter.
Yes, mademoiselle.
Bring me another, please.
Yes, mademoiselle.
Sorry, Mr. Pennington. Stupid of me not to return your lead. That gives them the rubber.
I'm sleepy. I'm going to bed.
What? Yes. Your time to turn in. Come along, Pennington.
Are you coming, Simon?
Not just yet. I think I'll have a drink first.
Don't be long.
I won't. Good night, Mr. Pennington. Good night, Colonel.
Good night.
Good time for me too, I think.
Oh, no, don't go to bed yet, Miss Robson. Please don't. I feel like making a night of it. Don't desert me. We girls must stick together.
Your gin and tonic, mademoiselle.
Thanks. Oh, do have something, Miss Robson.
No, thanks. It really is getting rather late.
You can't go to bed yet. Tell me all about yourself.
There isn't much to tell. I've just lived at home and I haven't been round much. This is my first trip abroad and I'm loving every minute of it.
You're a happy sort of a person, aren't you? God, I'd love to be you.
Oh, but surely...
Why did you decide to come here?
Oh, I didn't decide anything. It was Cousin Marie. I could hardly believe it when she suggested to Mother that I should come away with her.
And you're obviously enjoying yourself.
Oh, it's been simply wonderful.
Simon! Will you ring the bell? I want another drink.
The service has gone to bed. It's past midnight.
I told you I want another drink.
You've had quite enough to drink, Jackie.
What damn business is it of yours?
None.
Oh, what's the matter, Simon? Are you afraid?
I really think it's...
Don't go to bed. I want another woman here to support me. Do you know what Simon's afraid of? He's afraid. I'm going to tell you the story of my life.
The story of your life?
He treated me rather badly. Didn't you, Simon?
Go to bed, Jackie. You're drunk.
It's